Dorothy Lawson is one of the artistic directors and the founding cellist of Ethel, and they are coming to San Antonio to the Carver Center, and it's nice to have you on the phone here.
I am very pleased. Thank you for arranging it.
Well, it is a neat program and something a little different that you guys have a guest flutist. Tell us a little bit about how this program came together.
Well, one of Ethel's experiences as musicians has been realizing that music is a common language, it's a human undertaking everywhere in the world, and that the skills that we carry with us are deeply adaptable. It's a way of, in a way, participating in a larger human conversation wherever we go. And we began using that kind of proactively by reaching out to master musicians in communities we found really, really interesting. And just as a sort of a first flavor, we had already been doing work among Native American communities through the Grand Canyon Music Festival. And we've been going out there now for almost 10 years, and we found that so rich and, you know, kind of transformational for us that one of our very first outreaches was to the magnificent flute player Robert Mirabal from the Taos Pueblo. He's an extremely easy target in a way because he has been traveling and working among cultures far and wide almost his whole life. I mean, I think since he was a teenager, and he's a master at adapting to whatever cultural environment he's in, whatever style of music is being used. And we asked him. This is back in, I think, 2007. We approached him and asked him if he would consider helping us build a program for the Brooklyn Academy of Music about musical conversations that transcend culture. And he was very willing, very excited, joined us, and became, in fact, one of the sort of the key components of that program because he was so he had such facility in understanding and working with different musical languages. So I would say one of the measures of the beauty and value of that program is that all of the collaborators we brought together have become long-term friends, and we continue to work with them. And with Robert now, we've been traveling and playing concerts, you know, intermittently in all of our schedules. We've been working with him now ever since. I guess that's like 6 years, and it's beautiful stuff. There's just a kind of profound sense of sinking into an altered space when we perform this program. So we're absolutely delighted to bring it to San Antonio, and I would just actually sort of reveal to the audience that for that original program, we brought an artist, a master artist as well from San Antonio. We called the Conjunto Accordion expert Eva Ibarra and invited her to come to New York and work with us and work with Robert and work with the other artists. And she was magnificent. She was a kind of a showstopper. She was, huge heart, gigantic voice, you know, big personality, and everybody in New York just loved her. We just had a great time with her. She was great. So, so anyway, it's fun to be coming back to San Antonio, and it's fun to be bringing Robert.
Is this something that there's a program that will go through and you'll do a certain set, or is it sort of mixed up and you guys will announce things from stage? I know you guys are our audience may not, I've seen different setups and electronics and different things. Is this something, tell us a little bit about the actual concert experience coming up Friday.
Right. The actual program is set. It is a journey that we've worked through many times now. It starts with a kind of a quick introduction of Ethel's sound and the maybe the more urban environment that we come from. We're playing a piece that was composed for us by an incredibly talented Brazilian composer called Marcelo Zarvos. It's called Arrival, and just by its nature, it kind of embodies what we are, which is a blend of worlds, a blend between the Western classical tradition and the jazz styles, and then this Brazilian fiddling different, other world music. And then we introduce Robert and play a piece that we had all composed together for that original show at the Brooklyn Academy. And from there, Robert actually begins very early in the program to take us on this kind of meditative journey. He talks about the ritual practices of his tribe, of the reverence for nature and the earth and the sun. Of course, the program is called Music of the Sun, and he talks about how vital and central the sun is to the practices of his community, and we try to embody some of those rituals in music. We do break up from there. Again, Ethel plays a piece called Sunrise of the Planetary Dream Collector by Terry Riley, which is incredibly vigorous and intelligent and again more Western. But it's actually also a very challenging and I think interesting piece for the audience, because it's made up of modules that are all they can be combined in any order the performer wants to, and they can be superimposed. They all fit together if you so decide. So Ethel has come up with our own version of that. It's a very like I say, a virtuosic kind of piece. Robert has a moment of his own. He does some wonderful storytelling and plays his flutes. We bring together an observation of I think that two of the ceremonies that we look at during the program. One is a ceremony of running, which the tribe, his tribe, the Taos Pueblo tribe, do at this time of year, actually, to wake up the earth, to wake up their heritage, wake up their ancestors, and wake up their future by running earlier in the morning, right directly into the sunrise. And as they are running as hard as they can, they start screaming to wake things up. And we've created a piece that sort of evokes that pounding energy. Then later in the program, we do a piece that respects there's another time of year, a little earlier in the season, like around December, where the tribe cease all outdoor activities and hold a very, very quiet, reverent tone in the Pueblo, to allow the earth to sleep, and it's called their quiet season. And they feel it's important to give nature its rest as well. I think the whole program has a very understandable flow. It's something that the audience can immerse itself in and feel, both the exhilaration of various kinds of music, and then also the rest and restorative qualities of music. So we're really excited to bring it to San Antonio. We're very hopeful that people will come who crave a kind of a way of communicating with each other, of being brought together in sort of in a more, I think I would say, more spiritual way through music.
It sounds thematic, but at the same time, that wonderful sort of eclectic Ethel-esque program.
Yes. You know. Oh, yes, there will be. Well, I would say that's been one of our most delightful experiences as a musical group is no matter what background, the composers who have brought their music to us do it with a whole heart, you know, and there is a deep investment in sharing creating an experience, sharing an experience with an audience.
We're speaking with Dorothy Lawson, who will be in town Friday with the group Ethel at the Joe Long Theater at the Carver Cultural Center here in San Antonio. I know you've probably been asked this hundreds of times, but it's been a while, I think, if not the first time you guys are here in San Antonio, about the name. I've heard rumors it's sort of like a, what do you name a cat? What do you name a, you know, I've heard it's like, what do you name a, you know, like on I Love Lucy, there's Fred and there's Ethel.
Right.
Exactly. Is that where the name comes from?
Well, no, not originally. I mean, obviously that was a reference that everyone comes very, very quickly to Ethel Mertz or Ethel Merman. And they are absolutely iconic American figures. The original inspiration for the name, you're absolutely right that we first decided that we wanted a name that carried no trappings of institutional identity or ideology, and a name just seemed kind of fun and familiar. And when we started trying to find one, one of the original violinists, Mary Rowell, brought in her memory of the movie Shakespeare in Love, and she was very, very tickled by the moment when it's revealed that Shakespeare is in writer's block. He's in trouble. He's trying to complete a commission, but he's being stopped by the working title he's been given, which is Romeo and Ethel the Pirate's Daughter. And he just hates it, and he can't finish it. So we thought, well, you know, Ethel, it's such a wonderfully familiar, nostalgic, relaxed, kind of, you know, permissive-sounding name, and we really like that.
It's wonderful stuff. I've enjoyed your recordings and various performances around, and so tickled that you guys are coming. I guess I'd end.
Thank you so much. Glad to hear that. Thank you.
Yeah, it's really fun. I was curious. There is. If you go to a concert these days that's not a traditional classical concert, people are taking photos and they're doing videos and they go and get merchandise and maybe they can get a live recording of that performance or, you know, tour T-shirts and whatnot. And the classical side, you might be able to get an autograph or you might get a picture. I think I just got a picture with Alison Balsam not long ago,
nice.
Which I was just very tickled. And she was very sweet to do so.
Yes, terrific.
But, you know, in the concerts, and I know our world of listening to 90 minutes of a Mahler symphony or even 70 minutes of a Mahler symphony might be a little old-fashioned, but the idea of, you know, you shouldn't take a picture or you shouldn't tweet during a concert. The sound worlds, I guess, are somewhat different, but we're still living in that same world where, you know, Mick Jagger or whoever is going to have their fans screaming and enjoying the music and that sort of thing. How do you guys deal with sort of social media and Facebook and all that sort of thing? And
we encourage it. We're totally. I mean, sometimes it's not in our control. It often does present depend on the policy of the house, but as far as we're concerned, we've felt for a very long time that we would rather that people shared experiences and brought their excitement and their pleasure in something to other people, rather than feeling like it, like it had to be. In fact, I think it's been demonstrated very powerfully these days that is actually the engine that promotes art experiences better than anything is the sharing that people these days only acquire something after they've experienced it firsthand, and they're not running out to buy products from people they don't know. So we're delighted if people are moved enough to want to share, tweet about something while they're in the concert, photographs, things like that, sometimes have to do with how the actual theater feels about things. But as far as we're concerned, we're delighted, we're honored, we're grateful. We do always come out to sign after a concert is over to meet people and say hello and do whatever we can. Robert does as well. Most often he comes out after a concert. I would even go so far as dangerous to say this on air, but I would say that Ethel is happy when people even share our recordings. We would rather that people actually hear us than that they own us and keep them in the library somewhere.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, to me, it's that whole, I think we can learn a lot from this sort of grassroots, what Obama did and, his first campaign is that, grassroots really sort of did things. You guys have done, did you guys do Kickstarter or Indiegogo? What did you do for Documerica?
Oh, we did Kickstarter.
Yeah. So that sort of crowdsourcing, I mean, it's sort of how things these days seem to be a great way to share and communicate.
Yeah, exactly. And thank goodness. I mean, I also noticed an Economist article the other day about what they called the sharing economy. It was the cover of the issue. And I think that's it. In time, I mean, humanity is the most adaptive animal that has ever existed on the planet, in times of stress and times when you feel like your local environment is somehow challenged or collapsing, people come up with the most amazing, ingenious solutions, I think the old model of, buying, owning, keeping your material world to yourself has been breaking up. And in fact, people are opening their resources, their lives, their material possessions up to each other in brand new ways, just because it makes sense. So there's no reason for people to go in want if there is something available in the community. It's just that the community has to be ready to share it.
Well, it is lovely to talk to you. Safe travels, and we look forward to having you here Friday night in San Antonio.
Thank you so much. And I would hope very much we get a chance to meet you, but I appreciate this so much. It's another way to, actually come closer to people and have them hear something. Thank you very much.